and the ceiling must have been maybe 6 foot three, possibly the basement ceiling. And it was just enough space to put down a couple mat pieces. And as long as we cleaned up on Sundays in the bingo hall after bingo Saturday night, they let us go downstairs, and that was like our home away from home.
What's up, everybody, and thank you so much for coming back to the Pohata Podcast. This is a show where we talk about jiu-jitsu with jiu-jitsu people, very often black belts. This time around, though, I'm talking with Eric Swenson, the head wrestling coach for Wayzata High School. We talk about his wrestling career, his coaching philosophy, the storied history of Wayzata Wrestling's program, and the genesis of The Tower, a small facility the wrestling team has put together that also houses our beloved Hamel Jiu-Jitsu Club. Before we jump in, as usual, this episode is brought to you by way of the Tiger Soap Company, a small local business created by one of us. You may not be good at jiu-jitsu, but you can smell good at jiu-jitsu. The show is obviously also brought to you by Hamel Jiu-Jitsu Club in Hamel, Minnesota, at the Tower, just off Highway 55. Hear more about the facility in this episode. Shout out to Darren for hooking me up with Coach Eric. And without further ado, my conversation with Coach Eric Swenson. All right, sir, state your name, state your business.
I'm Eric Swenson. I am the head wrestling coach at Wayzata High School. I'm also a dean of students at the high school.
Big time.
Yeah, big time.
How long have you been there?
This has been year 10 at Wayzata High School.
As the coach
and the dean? As the coach and as started off as U.S. history teacher, economics teacher, and then got the role as dean. Yeah.
Sure. Did you wrestle?
I did.
Tell me about it. What do you got?
Yep. So I started wrestling in 1988. We were in eighth grade, and the coach was giving out some pretty cool shirts if you'd come out for the team. And I wanted that t-shirt, so I came out for the team. We never got the t-shirts. I don't know if that was a trick or if he ran out or whatever. So, but you know, some guys on the team became my friends.
Yeah.
And that's usually how it goes with wrestling. You gotta have some friends in it. And, so then I wrestled at East Lyme High School in Connecticut. Then went on to wrestle at Springfield College in Massachusetts. And yeah, it was a good experience. And then I started coaching right away.
Sure.
Right. Wait, after college.
Were you pretty good on the mats yourself? It's your chance to brag a little.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was okay for what I knew. We were very self-taught. We sure. practiced. We didn't have a facility like this. We had, so there was this one other family and they had four boys. And what the grandfather was a member of the Knights of Columbus. Mm-hmm. And so they had a bingo hall, and in the basement, and the ceiling must have been maybe 6 foot three, possibly sure. the basement ceiling. And it was just enough space to put down a couple mat pieces. And as long as we cleaned up on Sundays in the bingo hall after bingo Saturday night, they let us go downstairs, and that was like our home away from home. So we kind of self-taught, and it was just more like grit and fighting mm-hmm. than it was like real wrestling.
Sure.
And so, my sons and the kids that I coach are way more technical because for I have sure. learned so much more as a coach.
Yeah.
It doesn't even look like the same thing that we were
for
doing.
For sure. You're meaner though, probably.
We were meaner.
Yeah.
We were way tougher. We did things, people would probably turn an eye to today.
Right. Yeah. That's actually been one of my favorite things to have in these conversations, especially with guys that go way back, even whether they're karate guys or jiu-jitsu guys, mm-hmm. is before we had these fancy facilities, you're just in a basement somewhere,
yeah.
hard floors, taking hits.
Yeah.
You
know,
just yeah. better oh, stories.
Absolutely. You go into the wall, the mat was old and just rock solid. There was, we had space heaters in there. Mm-hmm. It was exactly, I think to your point, especially in the wrestling world, where a lot of we're guys who we don't have, so we figure out a way to have.
Yeah.
And I think the kids today, they're very spoiled with this. Mm-hmm. They have beautiful wrestling rooms.
For sure.
They have clubs and facilities everywhere. We just didn't have that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're better wrestlers though.
They are much better. They're superior. And we tried, I mean, we had, one of my, this family, the Kelly family, and they had four sons, and two of them wrestled with me in college too at Springfield. And then the two brothers, one of them went to Pitt, one went to Virginia. So, I mean, they could roll.
Sure.
They had an uncle who, let's say if we were teenagers at the time, maybe he was in his late 20s, early 30s. And he was not really a great technician. He was a heavyweight. We were all little lightweights, but he knew, let's give the boys opportunities. So he would load us up in our van, in his van, and he would drive us to New York City on a Tuesday night, to go train at the New York Athletic Club. And we had to go in through the dumpsters. They would open the door for us. They told us you can't use any part of the facility except the wrestling room. And we couldn't go in the locker rooms because, I mean, people are paying thousands of dollars to use the place. So he would drive us there. So New York with traffic was about a 2.5 hour ride. So we go there on Tuesday nights, get home, back home after midnight, go to school the next day. He would take us to New Jersey, to Pennsylvania, anything he could find us competition. And I think a lot of my philosophies came from that to give before I was here in Minnesota, I was in Florida, and in Florida, the rules are a little different. And, you can coach the kids 365 all year long. Hmm. I could be their coach. Here in Minnesota, you can't coach in the off season except right. The summertime. So I took that philosophy and I had another coach, and we both had Ford Explorers. We put the boys in the Explorers and we went everywhere up and down the East Coast. Tournaments in North Carolina, Virginia, everywhere with the kids. And that's how they got good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how you get your reps back then.
You get a lot of reps. So,
yeah. So your program wasn't strictly tied to a school when you were wrestling in high school and stuff, or were you?
No, we were East Lyme High School, okay. But, I grew up in Connecticut. And so Connecticut wrestling is not very big. Mm. You get a few shining stars, but it's just not a wrestling state, small population. So we were tied to it, but in the off season, we were not with, the high school we were with. We called ourselves the Dungeonites because it was the dungeon of the Knights of Columbus building.
Yeah. I like it. I see. And that cool stories like that. Are they going to be the same 10 years from now when these kids are telling them?
They'll talk about this tower that they're in. That's beautiful. And
tell me about this place. Actually, tell me the backstory.
Yeah. So during COVID, everything shut down. I don't know. I might get harassed for this story.
It is what it is.
If you've got a bunch of people who are pro COVID protocol, but you know, during COVID, you kind of had to decide what were you going to do? Were you going to lock up, stay inside, wash your groceries, or were you going to try to live a little? People in the wrestling community wanted to wrestle. We weren't just going to sit around and take a year off.
Jiu-jitsu as well.
Jiu-jitsu as well. Good.
Speakeasy jiu-jitsu became correct. A thing. So, you know, whole new culture.
Very, very speakeasy.
Yes.
So, you know, I've got a very small 2-car garage. So I put mats in there and people would come over and wrestle with my boys. But you know, it's cold outside and you didn't have enough. So some of these wrestling dads, one of them being Derek Cherney, he said, well, you know, what if we get our facility, and up the road here in Hamel, there was a storage locker behind a business. And the guy who ran the business was like, hey, I'll take a extra couple $1,000 a month if you want to rent this place out. So we put weights in there, we put mats in there, and people were coming from everywhere to wrestle with us. And honestly, I'll tell you that probably, some of our best guys got better during that time. Mm-hmm. There's no school. Mm-hmm. There was no, nobody was doing anything.
Yeah, you're not tired from sitting in class all day. All
nobody was doing anything. So we could, we lifted and wrestled, and it was the hangout. It was what you did. So, so that got pretty popular, and we used that for about 2.5 years. And then, if my math is correct, I don't know how many years out we are from COVID, but this past summer, Derek was looking for some things for his, for personally, for use. And then he kind of stumbled across this place and thought he could make it a, he could make it a gym, a dojo, a weight facility. Mm-hmm. He could, he had a lot of big ideas for it. So we're still in the, in the very early stages of what we can do with this facility. And right. for the people who are listening and can't see it, we got a wrestling room, full weight room upstairs. We're in an office. There's three offices. You might be able to hear in the background. There's kids in the mm-hmm. background who are pretty excited to just use this place. It's like a clubhouse for yeah. them. So it's early on, but it's, we're excited about the possibilities.
I rolled a little jiu-jitsu at the shed, we called it. Mm-hmm, and I loved it because it was kind of a throwback to, you know, how you came up in wrestling. And, you know, me and like my meathead friends growing up, we were powerlifting in single stall apartment garages and doing mm-hmm. strongman in the same kind of facility. So first time I showed up to roll some jiu-jitsu, I was like, oh, this is the spot here.
This is it. Right? You know,
simple, stripped down, get some weights in the corner. Let's do it.
Yeah.
But this is awesome too.
This is a beautiful facility. Derek's wife, Michelle, put like the history around the walls with all the pictures mm-hmm. and, it could be even more eventually,
yeah.
depending on how this grows. I mean, obviously we'd have to build the wrestling room a little bit bigger, but, this could become something if the space, is modified a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is separate from like the facilities you've got at the school.
Sure. We have beautiful facilities at the high school.
Yeah.
Beautiful facilities at the high school. But you know, the high school has high school hours. High school it just makes it a little bit tougher for the kids where these kids can come over here with their mom or dad and weightlift on Saturday night at 9 PM. They can come over and get a drill in. We have a lot of coaches. We have volunteers. We have a lot of dads who wrestled in college and are looking to give back. And they can say to the group, hey, Saturday morning, 7 a.m. They don't need a key. These people have been vetted and we know who they are.
Right.
And they can provide some opportunities for the kids.
Yeah. I'm gonna back us up a little bit.
Yeah.
I jumped. Tell me how you did in college. You wrestled in college, huh?
Yep. If you ask any wrestler, they're never going to tell you good.
Yeah.
We'll probably never talk about any wins that we had or, you know, a big win here, a big win there. It's always where we came up short.
Yeah.
So when you originally asked me that question, I was like, I did okay. You know, and I think I did okay. But I did come short of my goals. I wanted to be an All-American and I didn't achieve that. I qualified for nationals. I won some tournaments. But always just a little short. And maybe that was a good thing. Maybe that was a good thing to stay. It did not deter me from being hungry to find success and then using that to help my sons. You know, I'm helping everybody's sons, but I did have two boys come through the program and I would be lying if I said that wasn't very, very important to me.
No kidding.
So I wanted to make sure they had every advantage that they could. And I think some of my maybe struggles or disappointments or shortfalls ended up, possibly helping them and all the kids I've coached for 26 years. And I think to be able to see both ends of it, probably has helped. Cause I do know guys who were national champs and they don't necessarily like to coach because it's hard to coach and it's hard to do the, when kids are not, getting it right away or they're not blessed with talent or work ethic is maybe lacking and we had to figure out how to find or teach somebody how to grind, some national champs are like, whoa, this is no good. How come you don't get it?
Right.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So I think, I think that's kind of helped me out a little bit.
Sure. I was a thrower for a long time, shot put, discus, hammer and stuff. And I remember my high school coach talking about how you'll learn more from a 150 foot discus thrower than you will a 200 foot discus thrower. Because odds are the 200 footer is just a phenom.
Yeah, you're right.
It made sense first time you touched it, worked on some stuff, worked hard a little bit, went and won a national championship.
You're right.
Odds are that 150 guy sucked right off the bat. Had to learn a lot of hard lessons and figure out how to get there. And that's where coaching is born, right?
I agree. And you know, I do know national champions and Olympic champions who are coaches, and they're killing it.
Yep, yep.
You know, like, I mean, if you look down in Iowa, the Brands brothers or right here in Minnesota, Chad Erickson with Minnesota Elite or Paulson and Lawrence, at Pinnacle, they own these clubs and they bring in guys who are phenomenal at what they do. Dakota Trom was probably one of Minnesota's best high school wrestlers ever, and now he's coaching and he's doing a heck of a job. So he was able to figure it out to be a high level guy. Paulson and Lawrence were able to figure it out as high level guys, but I think there are guys like me who we were close but we didn't get to where we wanted to, and we were able to kind of use that as you can relate to the kid who's trying really hard and coming up short. And then now with my age and wisdom, I can maybe help them.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. So you've talked about how that kind of informed how you go about coaching and it informed your program. Tell me about the program and your coaching philosophy.
Yeah. the Wayzata program dates back to 1941. There are two murals in the wrestling room of the 1941-42 team and 1952-53 team. And these are just old farmers. None of them have a shirt on. It's their team picture. It's like shorts and a shirt, all jacked, probably never lifted a weight, but they moved hay and cows and pigs. Right. Yeah. And the 41 team, I think the picture was taken just before they got sent to World War II. And so there was a lot of vets and they came back. I mean, one of them was, his last name was Jordan. And so I got the mural up there. We got it up with the old athletic director, maybe about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And, some people came in from other towns because they wanted to see it. We have pictures of every wrestler who's ever gone to state since 1940 around the room. Mm-hmm. So I'm a history major. History teacher, yeah. So that's important to me.
Cool documentation.
Yeah. So the mural on the wall, people came in and they started pointing out people. And they said, you know, that's my great uncle. That's this, that's that. So one of them, his last name's Jordan. And apparently in World War II, he was the machine gunner underneath the plane, like the bubble underneath the plane, shooting around. Life expectancy in World War II was like none. He wasn't supposed to come home.
Right.
Oh, not only did he come home, but you know, he thrived in wrestling, thrived in World War II, thrived in farming, just did it all. So like we have like heroes up on our wall. And then, you know, anytime you've got a program from the 1940s till now, you've had some ups, you've had some downs. I would say in my 10 years, the most consistent thing is probably over the last, maybe it's getting close to 30 years, is my assistant coach, Dave Drogmiller. He wrestled for Osseo. He was a multi-time state champ for Osseo. His father, Hall of Fame coach for Osseo. He started coaching at Wayzata, let's just call it like the early or mid-90s, let's call it mid-90s.
Back at the end of the 1900s.
Yeah, right. And so he's been there as the consistent. And we've had great years where they've gone to state. Names like Zilverberg and Schreiner and then, you know, then so there was ups and then there were some dips. Then we've been hot for the last few years. We've had some state champs. We've had many, many state place winners. The only reason we haven't gone to state and maybe even put a push to win state is we're in the same section as St. Michael. Mm-hmm. And St. Michael, I think the difference between us and St. Michael is that in our town, in Plymouth, I think kids are drawn to hockey and basketball immediately. A five-year-old probably gets skates put on their feet or basketball because they got to go to a little basketball club or whatever. So we're dealing with a city of 70,000 people, and we have a youth club, which is a big youth club of 100 kids. So that's not a lot of, that's not a lot of people.
The current big is not that big.
Not big. St. Michael, hockey is not the first thing they do. Basketball is not the first thing they do. They have hundreds of kids who are out for wrestling. It is a culture. People move back to St. Michael who have moved away, and they have open enrollment. So if you're a guy who's in a smaller farm town around, and you go, well, I'm really good, but nobody on my team cares, and the town, everybody does these other things, but I am a wrestler. Well, St. Michael's 30 minutes away. Maybe I just go to high school there. And so they get that too. But if you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. And that's, so people are like, do you hate St. Michael? I don't hate St. Michael. I'm envious of St. Michael.
Respect.
I respect. I love, I want to beat him. Right. I want to beat him. And I'd love it if it was all cards dealt evenly, but it's not that way. So we're just going to keep working with a mission to try to pull off the upset. You know, we have great people. We have a youth club, the youth club, which has maybe some first graders through sixth graders. They're down in Rochester this weekend wrestling. Today, they're actually wrestling in the team state tournament. They won their first, in their pool. They took second in their pool. So they're in the gold pool. So that's, that shows we got some stuff coming. Because it's a young youth team too. It's loaded with fourth graders. So in some of their weight classes, They're young. They're giving up 2 years. So we've got some really good people doing some really good things in the youth here in Wayzata. And so I think the future is bright, but we're always going to have to work a little bit harder than others, just because we're battling a numbers issue with hockey, with basketball, and as Wayzata basketball, so tremendously good.
Right.
It's just getting more and more people excited about it.
Absolutely. And I mean, like the 10th grade team is ranked nationally and stuff. Like, yes. I mean, it's pervading the levels. What do you suppose is the genesis of that strong of a culture at St. Michael? Like, I mean, it's one of those, oh, they got a great thing going. Well, it started at some point.
Yeah.
So how do we take our thing and make it move that direction? What do you think?
That's a great question. I think there's probably some variables that that probably we can't copy. I still think, even though St. Michael is, whether they want to admit it or not, a suburb of Minneapolis, just like the rest of us are.
Yeah.
They still have a blue collar mentality. Mm-hmm. They still have people who think they're farmers. They still have this. We're not the rich city kids.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're talking down here and you're talking Plymouth, Minnetonka, Eden Prairie, Edina, wrestling is one of those sports. It's a combat sport, it's a fight sport.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've lived very comfortably in your life, and if your mom is worried, very, very worried about what your ears look like.
I knew you're gonna say that.
The amount of times parents will be like, oh, you're the wrestling coach? Yeah. Oh, I'd never have my kid do that. Like, that's a funny thing to say to me. You know?
I don't remember asking. Yeah,
I
didn't
ask, but like, I don't want their ears to look like that. I don't want them starving. I'm like, all right, it's not 1988. Now the ears can get busted up. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Sure. But I'll tell you what, I think if you go into business or you go into, a job interview one day, and you have the educational background and you're wearing the finest suit and your ear is busted up, I think whoever's shaking your hand knows this person's done some work. And I think it only helps you. I think it is a calling card where people look at you, they know you were a fighter. They know you've gone through some stuff. They know that you have a work ethic. So I wish my ears were banged up like that. Like, yeah. I'm proud of my sons who got banged up ears. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, you're probably going to get a job. You're going to get hired one day because of that.
Odds are they knew from the handshake too.
Nothing wrong with that. A good handshake. I don't know. Do people handshake anymore?
I'm a fist bump guy myself, frankly.
Okay.
But
okay. Yeah, well, I go to church and no one wants to shake hands anymore. I put my hand out there and it throws people off. Like, COVID, no.
Oh, it's a COVID thing. It's a COVID thing. Really? Yeah, that pervasive?
Yeah, people are terrified. Don't touch anybody.
Sure. Give me some coaching philosophy. Like, how do you run things, you know, day to day in practice, what have you?
Yeah. My philosophy is very, very simple.
Good.
Just outwork you. If the other team is going 5 days a week, we got to go six. If they are practicing an hour and a half, we've got to go 2.5. Like if you are not born and raised in this sport, and especially if you're a little behind, and that tends to be the clientele that we get, that kids come out as freshmen. I have to force feed you this sport and get as many reps in as we can in a very short amount of time.
Right.
There isn't, let's take a day off or let's have an easy practice or there's no time for that. You're only in high school for 4 years. And then for our boys who have been wrestling their whole life, that'd be robbing them of opportunity. So we had 2 state champs and a state runner-up this year. We went every single day on the premise of what are we doing to win the state tournament? And we called out on them every single day and talked about what are we doing to be the best? What are we doing to be the best? And all of them, I mean, to get into the state finals, the 3 captains, the 3 seniors, and to say this is what needs to get done, and for all of them to get to where they went, that doesn't really happen that much. And we modified our schedule. I took our team to 3 events that were very, very big. We went down to Iowa at the beginning of the year. We went to Wisconsin just after Christmas. We go to the Minnesota Christmas tournament before Christmas, and we didn't even take the whole team. We took the kids who's ready for this level. And then we took the rest of the kids, because we're not going to give them a weekend off, and we took them to a different varsity tournament. I had my other coaches take them somewhere else. So everyone was getting a varsity experience and exposure, just at different levels to meet the needs of, to challenge whoever, you know, wherever you were, and whatever you needed, that was the challenge. And so our coaching staff did an amazing job. And what we would call it in the classroom, we would call it scaffolding your learning. We scaffold our season. We scaffold our schedule to meet the needs of all the kids.
Yeah, give them the look they need.
Yes, we had to. And so we take my son, Logan. I forget what his final record was. Let's call it 48-1. Oh, he wasn't undefeated. Of course not. We were searching for a loss.
Yeah.
We were searching. So we went out to that Wisconsin tournament. It's out in Kakana called the Cheesehead. It's known around the country. Teams who can fly in.
Mm-hmm.
And the number one kid in the country in Logan's weight class from Illinois, who's going to Ohio State next year, he was in the bracket. And 3 other kids who are ranked nationally were in the bracket. So I said, like, this, we have to go to this one. Like, this is, I'm being selfish. This one's for Logan. We mm-hmm. got to go find him a loss.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost in the finals, but he wasn't going to get that chance to wrestle the number one kid in the country if we didn't go. If we stayed local and he pinned 3 kids in the metro area, what would that have done?
Or you underestimate some local kid and end up losing on points or something. That's not the loss you want. The loss I want is I learned a lesson from this stud over here.
100%.
Yeah.
it would have to be a really crazy match for him to lose to a local.
Understood. Glad to hear it, actually. Yeah. Talk to me about girls wrestling.
But yeah, girls wrestling is a... this is kind of... I don't know. I think maybe the comment would be fastest growing sport in America.
These are the headlines you see, little.
This local is the headlines. This is the headlines. So women's wrestling has there's always been girls in the boys' brackets.
Yeah.
Even when I was in high school, I wrestled a girl. 1990, I think it was a duel, and I wrestled this little girl. And so, we it's always been around. But never like we want our own.
Sure.
And so now Texas has always done it. So Texas has always held the boys' state tournament, the girls' state tournament. They've always had it.
Old Texas. When it comes to sports, they got it figured out down there.
They got it. They like to fight, and the girls can fight too.
Sure, good.
So then slowly around our country, different states have been saying, okay, let's offer it. Let's offer it. In Minnesota, it's growing really fast, but not all the resources are there yet. So the Minnesota High School League is saying, what we're going to do is we're going to still let the boys team house it. It's still, the girls are still on the boys team, but there's going to be girl events, just girl events. And then girls state qualifier, and then at the Excel Center, when the boys are wrestling, the girls will have their own brackets as well. So we're probably about 3 years away from high school teams having, just like boys basketball, girls basketball,
separate programs.
There's gonna be boys, yeah. Girls, and some towns are way ahead. They're pushing it hard. Our town, I will say as the head, so I guess everything comes through me.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't pushed it very hard because I am still focused on trying to get enough boys out for the team.
Sure.
Trying to focus on getting the boys team to where they need to be, that I don't know if I have the time, resources, and energy to say, let's go full Title IX, even
yep.
If I've got a boys team of 40, let's get a girls team of 40. And it also, I'm curious, is knowing how hard it is to get boys out in this town, how the community feels about girls in a combat sport.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that they're probably not in favor of it based on comments they've made to me about boys wrestling. I don't know, but girls wrestling makes sense because if you get girls to come out and wrestle, those girls are going to grow up one day and be moms.
Mm-hmm.
And I want moms to like wrestling, and I want moms to tell their daughters and their sons,
yes,
come out for wrestling and grow this sport so that it's not just 50% of our population doing it, right? We want everybody all in. So we had three girls on the team this year. One girl named Lauren took fourth in her section. So she was slightly away from state, but she's knocking on the door. We had 2 years ago, Maddie, she was in the very first offering of the state tournament for girls. And I'll remember this story for the rest of my life. Like they wrestled the boys semifinals. And then after that, they had brackets of four for the girls. And so I was on one side of the Excel Center and they were calling Maddie to the mat. And so I looked over and Maddie is standing in the center of the mat and she's taking it all in, right? There's 15,000 fans watching in the Excel Center, and they're super hyped up because they just watched the semis of the boys. And she's standing there and it almost looked frozen.
Yeah, I bet.
So I run across the mat and I just start yelling at her like she stole something.
Yeah.
And I just start yelling at her. And she turns her head and it kind of like zaps her into place.
Dial it back in.
And dialed it back in. And I believe if you did like trivia, I think the very first takedown ever in women's wrestling at the state tournament in the state of Minnesota is Maddie Alexander Wyzetta. She got the first women's takedown ever.
Very good.
It was pretty cool. And then Maddie's gone off to college, but I told her if she ever comes back in this area and we're hiring a woman's coach, she's hired.
Right.
So because she's tried to help the girls.
Yeah. Legacy alone. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. So it's growing. And I just think we're probably about 3 years away.
Sure.
In the state.
Maybe and it's one of those things where you get a small group of people excited about a thing. And it feels big, it feels fast all of a sudden. But let's be honest about like the organic growth of interest and all these cultural norms for years and years. You know, it'll be a slower thing than you and I would guess because we're inside of it and we're close to it all. But it's just cool to see it happening more than anything.
Absolutely. Anything to grow our sport, to have, you know, wrestling is one of those sports that I think middle schoolers and high school boys who aren't doing it but are doing nothing else in the wintertime are still not confident enough. They're still like afraid of what somebody will think. They're afraid to lose. They're afraid to put in that work. And then somewhere around like 22 years old, 23 years old, everybody becomes a fan of it. They love it. They follow it online. They get into jujitsu. They get I'm going to do some mixed martial arts. I'm going to do a fight.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, where were you? Where were you when you were 15?
Right.
You know, but they weren't ready yet, because I think it does take a little bit of throwing off any cultural norms. Kids today in school are told that don't run. Don't put your hands on somebody else. Don't talk loud. Don't get rough. Be quiet. Sit in your seat. We'll give you ADHD medicine if you run around too much.
Right.
You know, no recess. We're taking away recess. So everything that's taught to them is opposite of what we do in wrestling.
Right.
Fight. You know, you got blood on your face. Just wipe it off and keep going.
Yeah, push yourself.
Push yourself. It's uncomfortable. I have anxiety. Of course you're nervous. Of course you're going to feel like you're throwing up. You're getting ready to go out there. So that gets taken away. And then, like I said, somewhere around that 22, 23, all of a sudden UFC is a big mm-hmm. deal. People mm-hmm. are watching it. People want to be McGregor.
Yeah.
People want to be, all these guys that are fighting.
And then you hear the commentators talking about how everybody winning these has got a wrestling background.
They all have a wrestling
background. Wrestling.
They all have a wrestling background. Then it's a nice progression. You start off wrestling, then you get into jujitsu, so you know how to break a bone on an arm or a knee, how to lock it up, and then they learn how to throw their hands.
Yeah.
And once they can do that, we've got some guys, Logan Storley, who is a Gopher, All-American for the Gophers. He was a high school wrestler out in South Dakota. He is now he was Bellator champ. Mitch McKee in Bellator. He's a St. Michael guy. And if you're an All-American wrestler, all right, we're good. We've got the ground game figured out.
Yeah.
Now, if we can figure out how to isolate an arm, isolate a knee, a foot, and you know how to choke, and then to box, I would imagine the punching is going to be the hardest piece for the wrestler because we're not trained in it.
Yeah.
But with all of our balance and everything, I think, if you want to be in mixed martial arts, this is where you got to start. Yeah.
And if you even think you'll have a fleeting interest in starting some jiu-jitsu, you get to be that guy that shows up and has never done jiu-jitsu, but something is different about this guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a balance and a pressure and a response to this brand new clean white belt dude. You know, we've all had that role where you're like, oh, okay, this guy wrestled. You check the ears. Oh yeah, he wrestled.
There's something in it. And to be able to not be afraid and, you know, the confidence that comes with it. I mean, it's an amazing thing how good you feel when you're in combat. Right. And I see you guys doing your, you know, Tuesday nights or Wednesday nights when I pop through here and you've got some of my former wrestlers on the mats.
Yep.
And just that feeling that's in your gut, even when you lose and you look back, I mean, the initial loss, it makes you sad, right? If you feel down, you question existence, but when you look back and you go, and you know you competed and you know what you're doing and the brotherhood of that, I mean, we're one percenters. We're most people, like I've already alluded to, play every other sport than the wrestling, jiu-jitsu, I would even say judo.
Any of them.
Any of those mixed stuff, martial arts. We're a very tiny community. So once you're in and you know that you're in, man, it's a great feeling. And then you run into these people later on in life. You run into somebody and you're on vacation or you're on a cruise and you're sharing dinner and somehow stories get shared and boy, you meet up with the other wrestler from, you know what? That's your buddy. That's probably your drinking buddy for the rest of the cruise.
The trip. That's right.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. This might be a little bit of a rephrasing of some things you've already said, but I'd like to close by asking for advice. And I'm going to frame it to you two ways. If I'm a kid thinking about wrestling, pick the age group. That's up to you. Give me some advice. And then if I am a parent of a kid, what do you say to them thinking about getting their kid involved in wrestling?
So I would tell both the kid and the parent, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. For the various reasons that people have told me over the years, don't be afraid. If your biggest one is hurt, everyone gets hurt in sports. Our soccer team has ACLs that are gone. Our football players have necks and shoulders. Our baseball players have bad elbows.
Mm-hmm.
So please don't be afraid.
Getting hurt's part of life.
It's part of life. You know? It's part of life. And it sucks. And then you come back from it.
You grow.
You grow. You come back from it. For a kid, if a kid was going to try it out, the number one thing I would say is be patient. Be patient. Take 100 losses before you decide this isn't for me. Because this coach out in South Dakota, he's a coach, dad of a lot of wrestlers, and he had two t-shirts. And it was Harrisburg Wrestling. And on the back, one of his shirts that he wore was, "I yell because I care." And the other one, which would go into what I was saying, was "those who stay will win." And so you just have to run the marathon. So if you're a youth kid and you're in third grade and things aren't going your way, you're only in third grade, nobody cares how good a 9-year-old is. Your parents do at the time. Your coaches at the time. You do at the time. 9 years old means nothing. Nobody's going to remember. They're going to remember 18 years old at the state finals. That's what they're going to remember. My son won state a couple weeks ago. No one remembers what he did in third grade. Nobody. For the parent, the advice I would say is, why wouldn't you do this? Why wouldn't you?
Tell me what's holding you back.
Tell me what's holding you back. And why wouldn't you want your child to spend time doing things that teach hard work, dedication, struggling through adversity? Parents today are either helicopter parents or bulldozer parents. They're either, and I'm probably a helicopter. I'm around. I know what my kids are doing. I'm peeking in. I'm looking. I coached them. So I know I'm around, okay? And I can deal with that because maybe some parents don't want to be around. So I'm okay with a helicopter parent. Be involved. The bulldozer parent scares me, though. Get rid of any obstacle in front of my child. You don't want that. You want your child to lose, to maybe have a bloody nose, to be sad, to forget his wrestling shoes one day and have to practice in socks. Oh, I'm embarrassed. Yeah, I bet you, if you have to practice in socks, I bet you're going to bring your shoes next time. And so I would tell parents, like, this is everything you say you want your child. This is everything society says, like, we got to find people who are hard workers and can battle adversity. But we don't teach them to do it. We don't teach it. This would do it. This sport is exactly, parents, what you don't really want to do. You don't want to spank your kid. So let another kid spank your kid, right? Like, come on. Like, let some battling occur. Let your young boy cry a little bit in a healthy cry. Not cry because I didn't get what I wanted for Christmas. That's not a good cry. What did they post about me on Snapchat? That's not a good cry. But a good cry of, I've worked all season for my goal and I came up short. And now you're sitting in the back locker room on the floor with your hands, your head in your hands crying. That's a good cry. That's healthy for you. And so I would say to parents, like, this is only going to help you, your family, by doing a sport like this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in support of that, one of the things that I really valued as a thrower in high school was that it was me and this rock that I got to throw. Good or bad, it's my fault, my responsibility. Wrestling is obviously that, where a lot of high school sports are teams, right? I can deflect some blame. I can absorb some credit 100%. Here and there. And it's sort of tough to see what's going on, right? Yeah. But wrestling is one of those, obviously an individual sport amongst the team in the training environment. But the difference between what you're getting out of wrestling versus me throwing a shot put is it's man versus man too. Yeah. So I'm literally fighting a contesting opponent.
Right.
On my own under the spotlight. And I think that in terms of character building, the point you're getting to, I think that's a gigantic, especially now.
100%. And in the world we live in, if the media tells us if the media is telling us the truth and everyone can do everything, well, then this is great for the girls too.
Yeah.
Cause when we're girls were always taught like, no, don't jump on that. No, don't run. Oh, be careful. Now we're saying, get out there, go out there and pin that other girl, go out there. Yeah. Take her arm, put it behind her back, you know, and make her battle. So if you really believe in this philosophy of the kids these days and the social media is ruining
yep,
them,
yep.
Well then get them off of it.
Let's go.
Get them off of it. Let's go. Right. I tell you what, I've got kids who are on their social media, on their phones all the time. I had 50 kids out for the team this year, big team. Not one touched their phone for 2.5 hours. So it can be done. 2.5 hour, yeah. Nice social media break,
right.
All exercise. Kids who weren't even good wrestlers, who were proud of themselves because coach, in a healthy way, I lost 10 pounds. Oh, look, my body fat went from 18% to 11%. Feel good about myself. I mean, isn't that the sales pitch of Lifetime Fitness,
right?
And now you got to pay a lot of money to send your kid and you to Lifetime Fitness. But people who do that, I don't know the science, but whatever goes into your brain and starts making you feel good because you look at yourself in a mirror and go, wow, I'm transforming. Well, what do you think wrestling does? So that's my sales pitch to a lot of people. And it works sometimes. And then other times, you know, I mean, if you can't sell it, you can't sell it. Like if they're too worried about your ears, I don't know what I can say, you know,
yeah.
They'll pretend that they care about hard work and grit, but playing Fortnite all night long, that's not the same grit that I'm looking for, you know?
Good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Tell you what, I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Yeah, there you go. If you know people, get them signed up. YZWrestling.com.
Sure. We'll spread the word. Thanks,
yeah.
Coach.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of the Pohata Podcast. And hey, if you're a regular listener, head on over to the Pohata Podcast on Instagram, where amongst the ridiculous memes, you'll find a link to the merch shop and be able to keep up with the disorganized going-ons of the show. And hey, before you go, here's a little preview of an upcoming episode.
All my guys make fun of me because I'm a horrible fan of
fighting. Same,
oh,
same.
I never know what's going on with anyone with grappling, with MMA. They're like, you didn't know so-and-so fought so-and-so, yeah. And now they're fighting so-and-so. Yeah. And don't you think this is like a better matchup? He deserves that matchup. And I'm like, can we just train? I don't know what you're talking about.
There's 3 UFCs a week, yeah. Let alone every other organization at every level. There's no way.
Right. I'm trying to follow amateur MMA to know what the scene's like for my guys. Like, right. That's hard enough.
The co-